Today we're going to talk about evaluating cultural trends in parenting, and it's really interesting how they change over the years, isn't it? I was asking my mom when I was pregnant, I asked her, so how was your delivery when I was born? And she's like, I don't remember, because at that time they knocked us out. Like, what? So she couldn't even remember at what point they knock you out, but so she doesn't even remember the delivery. Because I thought, how does that work with pushing and all that, you know? I don't know. So, you know, at that time, fathers were not in the delivery room as well. So when I was born and they said, it's a girl, my dad wasn't there and my mom was out of it. So it was not really a memorable thing. So I thought that was interesting. And then she also told me at that time, it was just the cultural trend that nobody nursed, that everybody did the formula thing. And she said she doesn't remember that there was even a discussion about it or a choice being made. And she said, I remember I was 21 and far from home and my mom. And so I just did what the medical staff told me to do. And the thing that made me cringe was she said, just after you delivered, they gave you a shot to dry up your milk, and that was it. And I was like, oh, that's so awful, you know, that I love nursing. I love the benefit for the mom and the baby and this the emotional bonding. I think it's so precious. So I'm glad that's changed. So today we want to talk about cultural trends that you all as young moms are facing. And we want you to really be able to think it through. Kathy Hoffer's here to help us really think through these things so we don't just take that shot and go with what the culture says, but really think about what the implications are. So Kathy Hoffer is here. If you don't know her, she became a Christian, she was telling me, when she was 12, and then became a part of Xenos, which was in 1975. So she has seen a lot of things. She has a lot of stories to tell, I'm sure, about Xenos over the years. But she's a home church leader, and she's on staff here at Xenos. If you get an email about servant team stuff and you've seen her name but you haven't seen her face, this is who she is. So she's two grown kids, a lot of experience as a parent. So I'm going to turn it over to her, but let me pray first before we get started. So God, you are the author of parenting. You designed this for having a mother and a father be there in a family unit. So we want to look to you for our direction in parenting. And so I just really pray for your guidance as we talk today, that we will come away with real direction from you. And I just thank you for Kathy and the research she's done on this. Pray that you will speak to her and encourage all these young parents here today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thanks. All right, well, she already introduced me, so I guess I don't need to do that. But I would add that I'm a nurse as well, and I've also been working with teenagers, 20-somethings and 30-somethings for maybe 25 years or so. So seen a lot of parenting and done a lot. My kids are 21 and 24. And also, I wanted to tell you what all's in this handout because it looks like a book. The first four pages are for note-taking. They go with my outline, so if you want to take notes, there it is. And then after that, there's a page of discussion questions because we'll get in discussion groups for a little while after this. And then after that, there's some extra material that I just thought was good, but I didn't have time to say. And then at the end, there's a reference list and a resource list. So that's why there's so much there. So don't be overwhelmed. I'm not going to talk for 3 hours. So anyhow, why would we talk about cultural trends? Because most of the time, people come to this meeting and think, they want to hear how-tos, you know, how do I deal with this situation? How do I deal with that situation? But there's so much, especially now in this day of media, there's so much coming through Facebook, through the internet, through everything, TV, all that, that we're hearing every day. And if we don't pause and think, is that even something I agree with, then you could just end up gulping it down mindlessly and then be like, oops, darn, I wasn't thinking. And this is one of those teachings that I could easily do death by 1,000 qualifications, but I don't want to. So just if you think of something that ought to be qualified, just assume I meant it that way. But I have three that I want to make. First, I'm not saying that everybody in your generation or in this room is doing the things that we're going to talk about. It's just what the culture is saying, the messages we're being given. Second is I had limited time and there's so much to talk about, so I had to pick what I thought was most important for our kids' well-being. And so by definition, the positive stuff doesn't really need that much explaining. So I apologize up front if it seems really negative, because it's going to sound negative, but we'll get positive at the end and in discussion groups. And last, I know that every generation tends to wonder about the other ones, about how they do things, and I find myself doing the same. But please don't write me off as just the old lady, because I'm not saying anything that's just my own opinion. I made sure of that. So, all right, to summarize the cultural trends, as far as I can tell, this culture's message to parents is devote almost all your time, money, and energy and affection to your kids and try to make them happy at any cost, right? Is that what you guys get for the most part? And to illustrate, I forget what I entered, but I Googled it just to see what first headlines that came up, and I got 7 ways to keep your toddler busy while riding in a stroller, how to make a bedtime routine chart, what to expect at your toddler's first visit to the dentist, the essential guide to potty training gear. You need gear for potty training. Okay, none of these things taken alone are bad, of course. It is hard to rally toddlers. But if you take them all together as the first things that popped up for parenting, Googling, it gives a picture of parents kind of micromanaging and fussing and trying to just get every detail down to the wire, and that can make you crazy. So just real quickly, just some positive trends in this culture. Spending quality time and getting dates with your kids, whatever else after today, don't stop doing that, because that's so important, and that's been a real good shift. Talking to your kids and relating to them, having conversations, awesome. Family time, making memories, enjoying the kids. This is going on with more regularity in most households, I would say, than ever before. And so that's a great, great trend. And then being friends with teenage kids. You guys probably aren't there yet, most of you, but it used to be assumed that teenagers were pretty alienated from their parents. And now more parents are keeping it going, keeping the relationship with their teenagers. But the culture has twisted even these and taken, if you take anything to the extreme, it's almost always bad and unhealthy. And that's what the culture is kind of doing with some of these. So for the negative trends, I ran my list past a couple of our educators down at Calumet School. And here's to see if they were seeing what I thought I was seeing. And here's what one preschool teacher said. She said, I see it in preschool all the time. Parents are under so much stress and trying to manage it all. They lose their lives, their faith, and their marriages. Managing and keeping the kids happy is the priority. And then a leader in our student ministry said, many people once active in real Christian service are taken all the way out of it because they feel like they have to be available to their kids every moment. So these are high stakes things, marriage, kids, faith, you know, these are things, if I could put anything on my list of things I don't want to mess up, it would be those. And it's also confusing, especially these trends I'm doing, because they're motivated by love and they don't seem wrong on the surface. That's why I chose the ones I chose, because they're the ones that seem like you're just loving your kid up. But it turns out maybe not. Okay, so first one, abdication of parental authority. There's a new book by Leonard Sachs called The Collapse of Parenting. He's an esteemed doctor and psychologist, and he's got this new book out, and so there's an article that was kind of summarizing the points of it. And one of his main points was there's been a transfer of authority from parents to kids. He says the hierarchy of a parent over a child no longer exists, and instead of a parent exercising their authority, because I'm the parent, I do know more than you, you're two, I'm the parent, they focus on making the kids happy and boosting their self-esteem. And so in this culture, parents now see their job as facilitating whatever a kid wants to do. So Sack says, our job as parents is to teach right and wrong and the meaning of life. Remember that, and keep them safe and healthy, which everybody agrees on, and to develop character, like humility or other-centeredness or self-control. He says these are the biggest predictors of success in adulthood, not education, not wealth, not status, but character. And he says parents have kind of dialed back on developing their kids' character. And some of his examples, he said, you know, he's a doctor, remember? And so he says he sees parents coming in all the time and the kid will be like, shut up, Mom, you don't know anything. And the mom just looks kind of embarrassed but does nothing because she feels powerless. He said 10 years ago, that would be really rare. Now it's a regular occurrence. I know. And then he said he's parents ask instead of tell, like something like, hey, would you please stop whapping your sister with the 2x4? Is that okay? You know, I mean, that's extreme, but he said parents seem incapable of saying anything to their kids that ends in a period. It's all, is that okay? Would you please? Instead of not mean and shrilly, but authoritatively saying, stop that right now. That's not okay. And so that's a trend that we feel like we've lost our parental authority. That's what the culture is saying to us. That's the message that you get in most areas. And it's really not popular in today's culture to say anything's wrong. If you do, you're going against the tide. And this is extra harmful for parenting. And there's lines that need to be drawn. There are moral black and whites that we need to lay down for the kids, and we can give them a whole lot of freedom within those. But there are lines that we need to draw boldly, no matter what the culture is saying. And here's a real serious example of powerless parenting at work. A style that's aimed only at keeping the kids happy and giving little kids choices, big choices, without guidance. Maybe some of you guys saw this front line from, I think it was January, Growing Up Trans. It talks about one gal who started living as a boy at the age of six. Six. And the parents said, they interviewed the parents too, and the mom said, I had to listen to what we heard from our child, nothing else mattered. Or there was another one who started puberty early, so she who became he hadn't had surgery, but he wanted to start taking testosterone at age 9. And the mom said, well, we'd rather he transition without meds, we'd rather he don't do this, but we aren't experiencing what he is. So this is the right step. The bottom line is our son's happiness. I hear this all the time. Six-year-olds getting to make decisions like that and parents stepping back like, just gotta keep them happy. It's not PC to talk about this, I know that, but the parents even who were interviewed were uncomfortable with the choices and their kids' decisions, but they were too weak or they're too unsure of authority to draw the lines that needed to be drawn for their kids' benefit. That's abdication of authority. And so the cultural message is parents now value self-expression at all costs. And don't you dare squelch it, moms. You know, just get out of the way and let your kid be who he is. It sounds nice until you watch it roll out and then interview them when they're 50 and all that. Another example is 24/7 access to smartphones. No kid should have unfiltered, unsupervised access to the entire internet is at his disposal. And there's a lot of reasons for this and other teachings on it, but I do just want to put it on the radar. None is more important than the issue of porn. Every device in your house should have a porn filter on it. And kids need coached about how to excuse themselves when they're at somebody else's house, because it will come up. And you're probably thinking, well, my kid's 3, I'm not there yet. Well, you know what, if they're on the internet, they can accidentally stumble onto it, and then they'll be intrigued and go looking for it. So don't wait till it's too late. And there's some resources at the end of this. One of the trans kids actually said, in case you need more convincing, actually said, I learned I was trans on YouTube. So faith-based and secular authorities agree that everybody agrees kids shouldn't have unfiltered access to the internet, but it's incredible how many moms feel like, oh, I can't help it. I can't do anything about it. Actually, you can. They'll make you pay and they'll fight, but it's worth it. For our kids' sake, we need to not be afraid to exercise the authority that's ours and lead our kids regardless of the cultural message. Otherwise, you got these little ones that are in control of their own characters, and it's not going well because they're not equipped for that. Kids will not just do the right thing naturally and just grow up without guidance. That's not a thing. And I'm not saying that parents who parent like this never make requests or tell their kids what to do. They do. But the problem is they don't enforce consequences. So they give reminders, but since they feel stripped of authority, the kids just blow them off because they know nothing's going to happen. They just get threats. And so no learning or character development happens. So we need to stand against our culture here. And just a couple quick results just about this. Sachs, the author of that book I was talking about, he cites numerous studies that found that a lack of parental authority is why obesity is on the rise, why more kids are on anti-anxiety and ADD meds, why children have a culture of disrespect, seem fragile, and why American children no longer lead the world in education. So yeah, this is an important topic. And then teachers from younger grades have said that they are seeing, and this is our schools again even, they are seeing more and more of these parental malfunctions resulting in kids who are more self-centered, less able to control themselves or get along with peers. So this is a big deal. All right, second trend, over-parenting, aka helicopter parenting. And I'm sure you all know this by now, but a helicopter parent is a parent who hovers over kids in a way that prevents them from learning independence. And this is not a new concept, and you might be thinking, God, this has been run into the ground, because it's been talked about a lot in the last couple years, but it's still rampant, so I'm still going to talk about it. And what I didn't know is boomers, I was on the tail end of the boomer generation, I guess we're the ones who started it, the ones who had kids in the mid-80s, which was not me, started it, sorry. But the oldest helicoptered kids are now turning 30, so we get the benefit of seeing what comes of that style of parenting, which I had not quite heard that before. Hindsight's always 20/20. I wish I had it with, you know, my own kids. But what does it look like? First, it looks like being there. Okay, yeah, we're all supposed to be there for our kids, right? That's our job. But helicopter parents take it to, like, a whole new level. They're emotionally present and becoming one of the kids' closest friends, which is appropriate eventually, but not when they're 4 or 6. You know, kids need peers. Sometimes parents stay the closest friends and there aren't really too many other friends on the horizon. Constantly smoothing over difficulties for kids. If a kid has a bad day or experiences a disappointment, parents try to make it up to them. Like if they come in last at something, everybody gets a trophy anyways. If your kid doesn't get invited because he was mean, parents tend to not say, well, you were mean. That's what happens when you are mean. So maybe the kid will learn. Instead, you try and make it up and take him out to somewhere awesome anyways so he feels like he didn't miss out, spared from natural consequences. So emotionally present, also physically present. Helicopter parents are there for everything. This is the generation that talks about bonding and attachment, but not just bonding and attachment, those are good things, but to the extreme, go to great lengths in this generation. Parents are there during play dates, not just supervising as needed, making sure everybody's safe, but directing, overpraising, giving ideas, explaining how the toys work nonstop. to the extent that kids don't get a chance to figure out anything, they don't get to play with sticks, they don't get to, you know, figure out how to work out conflicts on their own, they don't even give it a chance. I mean, obviously parents need to step in and help them and teach them and all that, so it's not, please don't think I'm saying don't help your kids. If anybody leaves thinking that, I'll be bummed. But we're talking about the hovering, the ones that don't let their kids figure out anything. And as kids get into school and sports, we're the ones paying attention to what the teacher's saying and the deadlines to the coaches at the start of the season while the kid sits by on their screen and we're working harder than they do. We're so there that we don't defer to any other authority, whether it's teachers, coaches, bosses, doctors. Parents are calling up bosses and chewing them out of adult kids. And this is a big trend, not just highlight stories. A couple examples that I read about, kids who go to sleepaway camp, whose rule is you can't take a smartphone, or you can't take a cell phone, no cell phones. So they confiscate them at the beginning. Well, the parents send two so the kid can keep a secret one, still talk and say, I'm fine, I ate my dinner, I'm scared, you know, whatever. So nonstop, long umbilical cord. Or this one has to be kind of, I don't know how common this is, but one school had to cancel a field trip because too many parents volunteered to chaperone, and when they asked if someone would be willing to stay back, none of them would. That's what I mean by helicopter parenting. Also there, but distracted. So this generation is spending more time with their kids than any generation before, but it matters how you spend it. It's not all, you can be in the same proximity, but you can be so distracted by screens and projects and phones and tasks and to-dos and your own things that you're never really settling in and having a conversation with your kids. So this is another cultural trend that's kind of side by side, like the culture has us with our kids a lot now, which is awesome, but you know, you need to settle in sometime each day and get some time with your kid and get one-on-one time with your kid weekly. I did it through high school and they loved it. It was just a little bit, but they loved it. And we had it as a no-fight zone. You'll need that when your kids get older. They'd start fighting. I'm like, nope, we'll fight tomorrow. This is our time. And they're like, oh, good. I'm not even kidding. And so spend some time daily getting on your kids' team. If you're the type to just want to do, make sure you're settling down a little bit. And sometimes we make ourselves crazy trying to make everything so perfect. This is Pinterest generation. It's awesome. But it's also can make you crazy. I gotta make my nursery grade. I gotta make memories. Gotta make the best cake ever. And I've gotta top the last four I made. Oh God. Decorations, favors. I love parties nowadays. They're so beautiful. But if you're doing it to the exclusion of getting to be with your kid, just keep first things first. And so this paragraph I gave you, the ones that are in smaller font, that means I'm not gonna read them. They're just for you. And of course, I love creativity. I love art, but just if you have to choose between the two, remember which comes first. Third one, overemphasis on achievement and academic advancement. This is the third characteristic of overparenting. Helicopter parents tend to be permissive with character and moral guidance, but they pressure the heck out of their kids when it comes to school and everything that goes into getting the good grade so that you can get into college. And it starts early. You see other kids getting involved in activities and you're like, oh, I didn't think of that. Is my kid supposed to do that? And you start enrolling your kid that has no interest or you're already busy enough and you start feeling like, oh, they're going to a gifted program. I better do that. Oh, their kid's playing soccer. I didn't ever put my kid in soccer and the kid hates soccer. I did that to my kids. They both hated soccer and they stunk at it. I'm like, oh, I guess my kids are supposed to play soccer. Hoping that they won't be left behind by 3 years old and then they'll be losers for life. You know, you start feeling like that when you look around, like, oh my God, I didn't take them to mommy and me and now they won't be attached or whatever. You know, you play off it when you see stuff. You're like, I should do that for my kids. Totally. And then by the teen years, parents when parents are supposed to start letting the leash out so the kid isn't just shoved into independence cold turkey, they start reining in kids for fear they'll get a B if they let them go out. I kid you not, parents are afraid of Bs. Whether it's that they're living vicariously or their identity's wrapped up in how their kids do or for fear of the kid's future, all that is, it's like, oh, here, no pressure, sweetie. It all depends on you. And so this is a real thing. I can't even tell you how much I read on how intense this gets as schooling goes on. So watch for that if that's a tendency. People hold their kindergartners back, not because they're not ready for kindergarten, but because they want their kid to be bigger so they get the better roles in sports, or they want their kid to be first in the class, so, okay, I'm going to send my 9-year-old to kindergarten, he'll be first, you know, or whatever. So it's not, there's nothing wrong with making sure your kid's ready for kindergarten, but if it's just because you're afraid they'll not be first, that would be this kind of parenting. Parents check parent portals constantly, neurotically. Kids don't. The parents do. The parents care about the grades more than the kids do, which has always sort of been a thing, but they take more responsibility for school than the kids do. That's not supposed to be that. And then parents nowadays try and control as many outcomes as possible. So if there's a bad grade or they get overlooked for an honor or caught doing something that could look bad on their all-important college application, the parent just jumps in instantly, bypass the kid. It's not like the parent is never needed, but first you send the kid in. The parent jumps in to question the teacher's judgment or to holler at the coach saying, you're ruining my kid's chance for a scholarship, put him back in the game. Or I heard of one mom who called a military academy and said, why didn't my kid get promoted? Why are you disadvantaging my son? You're ruining his life. These are commonplace things. This is where it heads if you don't get off this train. And moms are constantly making excuses for their kids, blaming bad grades for extenuating circumstances and pleading for another chance. And they go to bat for the kids, even if they're in the wrong, because the college application is more important than character in their minds, and the kid gets no consequence and also experiences no disappointment, so why should they be motivated to try? I've also heard, I know a lot of teachers, so much of teachers' time goes into responding to parents that some schools are saying, just please just give out A's and B's so you can continue to teach. And I heard from a friend a couple weeks ago who subbed at one of the better schools in Columbus, and told me they are not allowed to give an F ever. If a kid doesn't turn in homework, they still have to give a D-, because the parents might sue them or something. Parents are doing their kids' homework. Teachers see a huge disparity between what's done at home and what's done at school. Some parents drop thousands of dollars to get their kids a diagnosis of ADD so that they can get more time on tests and look better on paper. You know, and this continues into college. Parents calling their kids, hey, time to get up, you have that test today. It smacks of over-involvement and desperation, and this is the cultural norm that you guys are in. And so if you're not like, oh, wait, just because everybody else is saying it and doing it, it doesn't mean that I need to jump on that train. And obviously, at early ages, oops, I didn't turn off my phone sound, a certain amount of hovering is appropriate, necessary. And I just want to make this clear again. Please keep getting time with your kids and play with them. It's okay to play with your kids. It's good to play with your kids, just not always play with your kids. And of course help them, of course do them favors, of course remind them. You know, it's not like they're little adults here, but think, what am I teaching them by doing this? That's what this is about, is what's the long view? What am I hoping to prepare them for adulthood? And is this falling in line with it? Okay, so I've got enough bad news. I got one more trend, but for now I want to run the video because I think we need some comic relief. and this is funny.
You guys, I'm really upset. I was a terrible mom today. I told Valerie she was pretty.
Oh no, didn't you get that article I sent you?
Yeah, Molly, don't you want her to love her for her whole self and not her outer shell?
I know, it just slipped out. I forgot. I'm not supposed to comment on her appearance. I'm simply supposed to say, you exist.
Right. Well, don't feel too bad, because last night I told Anthony, good job, for finishing his dinner.
Oh, Megan, come on. I sent you that link to that video. It's a brief 90 minutes. Make the time.
Yeah, you're going to ruin his relationship with food for the rest of his life.
Well, exactly. I think I fixed it. After dinner, I flipped the whole table over and yelled at the whole family, terrible job eating!
Good move.
That's smart, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm in the same boat. Tomothy did a drawing, and I told him it was great. And I even said I loved it.
Why did you do that? I sent you that blog post from momfarts.gov saying your comments should never be results-oriented.
I heard they're turning that blog post into a movie.
Oh, I can't wait!
What? Yeah, that blog post, though, it said that you can only comment on the effort they put in.
Well, here's the bad news, guys. He didn't put any effort in at all. I think he's turning out to be a very gifted artist.
Don't tell him that.
I didn't! Once I realized it, I ran into my room and locked the door so I wouldn't be tempted.
Oh, well, you know, the other day I told Valerie to hurry up, and now she has no sense of time at all, and she stopped sleeping.
Well, I told Tomothy not to touch his poop, and now he thinks there's something wrong with what came out of his body, and he hates himself.
Oh, this morning Anthony said, I falled, and I corrected him and said, no, you fell, and now he stopped talking.
Oh, I tried to teach Valerie right and left.
Molly!
I completely forgot that when she reaches a certain age, she can decide what's right and what's left, and now she can't even think for herself anymore.
Also this morning, I said, it's cold outside, rather than you may feel cold outside, and now Anthony thinks the world is a terrible, unfeeling place.
Well, I called our pet our dog. Wrong, guys! You don't label things. It's not fair.
No, no!
You guys ever feel like, oh my God, there's so many rules, I can't keep up with them, and they're like, you get so many posts every day telling you what to do and not do, and you end up crazy, and trying to keep up with all the minutiae, and I'm not trying to add to that today, trying to give overarching principles. I hope it feels like that, and more than anything, remember what our jobs are and are not. And put our energy toward the main thing. All right, the last trend, inordinate focus on health and safety. That's just cute, but it is. So what are we told, I don't know, what are we told to stress about and fear in this culture? Oh my God, you know, you get pregnant, it's like, oh my God, I got to choose the best pediatrician, not just a good one, but an amazing one. Or the right blankets, the right swaddlers, cribs, detergents, bath soaps, clothes, the best car seat and booster seat, because kids are in them until they're 20 now, right? How to approach birthing, bonding, breastfeeding, immunization, sleeping, you know, and nowadays A+ isn't good enough. It's got to be A++++, or you're a terrible parent. And so you just, we're told to fear C-sections and episiotomies, which we should fear episiotomies. They're nasty. We fear kids getting hurt. Not that you want your kid to get hurt, but it's getting more and more acceptable to be overprotective. Kids on shorter and shorter leashes. We fear kids feeling rejected or left out. We fear predators leaving baby with a babysitter. Some parents even don't want to leave the baby with their husband, who's their dad, because, you know, nobody else can put the baby to bed but me because they won't do it right. They won't put the bear in the right spot, or the kid will have abandonment issues, or maybe the kid will cry. We're afraid to let the baby cry. How much should we cry? A little bit, a lot. We're afraid of letting them cry the wrong amount. Unhealthy food, however that's defined. Bullying, however that's defined. Letting kids ride with other people because somebody else might crash, and of course I never would. Obviously, there are some legitimate issues here, obviously, but the dangers can tend to be exaggerated, and you hear it, just scroll through Facebook someday, and you'll find all sorts of ways that your kids can be in dire straits. If you get preoccupied with health and safety that's become really inordinate in our culture, you could just start obsessing over minor differences in quality, and then, like, forget to have fun. So what it looks like in daily life, in general, and this is not my words, this is from a couple authors, we become a nation of fear-driven control freaks. How does this show up? Well-ordered households. Nothing wrong with that. You don't need a bunch of chaos, but the stress that goes with this. And in discussion groups, you'll get a chance to talk about, okay, how do you know when it's balanced or not? Not like there's like a silver bullet, but food. You know, a lot of time and energy goes to regulating everything that our kids eat, to the point that some parents are staying home and only let their kids eat at home and only eat at home and don't socialize because I want to control every piece of food my kid eats. That's extreme. Overblown stranger danger. Yeah, it would be awful to have your kid kidnapped, but this generation is escorting 13-year-olds on trick-or-treat. Is there a guarantee they won't get snatched if you don't walk with them? No. But at a certain age, you gotta say, I've taught them all I could, and it's not gonna get any different if they're 20, so I gotta let them go. It's hard, but that's how it is. We're a bunch of germophobes. We try to create a protective barrier between our kids and a germ-filled world, and maybe we think about it too much. I mean, I use the hand sanitizer some, but are we using it religiously to the point where it's actually weakening our immune system and doing some other stuff? Physical and mental development. There's so many opportunities for the alarm to sound. There's therapy for everything. We can send kids to speech therapists at 18 months old if they're not talking as well as another kid. And I know a family member of mine, he didn't start talking until he was 4, and he's brilliant. So, you know, it's like you start raising the alarm a little too soon. One mom I read about quit her job to better intellectually stimulate her preschool son after testing showed his pencil grip wasn't right. Preschool. So, yeah, that's overkill. School. Parents are escorting kids to school and to the front doors and into the classroom and asking to stay, literally, at older and older ages. And even driving kids to school who could take the bus because maybe the bus will crash, or maybe they'll fall off the seat, or maybe they'll get sat on the bus. Phones, we talked about this a little bit in the long umbilical cords, but parents expect constant updates from kids and start freaking out if they don't hear every day, even from college kids. They start calling the college. I know parents who have a GPS tracker on their college kids' phones. They don't need that, they're in college. And last, overuse of the bully label. Sometimes kids are bullies, and sometimes our kids need our help, but true bullying hasn't increased, but the culture has gotten really quick with the label. All a kid has to do is be kind of mean to your kid or make him cry, and he gets called a bully in some circles. And it's hard to watch. You hate seeing kids be mean to your kid, but instead of trying to remove them from the situation, if it's not dangerous, what you need to do is help your kid navigate how to get over being maligned or treated badly rather than get away and have no skills for that and then fall apart every time it happens in their adult life. So what? You're thinking, well, these aren't bad things. Shouldn't we want to keep our kids safe and healthy? Yeah. But there's more to it than stats. The irony is that we are now arguably living at the safest time for children that the world has ever known. The childhood diseases that were once common and deadly have been all but eradicated. Our food is cleaner and safer than it has ever been before. Thanks to seatbelts, they don't even die in car accidents and anywhere near the numbers that kids of our generation did. Crime stats are down, and yet people are terrified. Another quote, of course, serious harm coming to any child is unspeakable tragedy, and real child predators are out there, even though very few commit stranger-to-stranger crimes. But why do we base our daily decisions on a 1 in a million chance that our kids could be killed by a stranger when in any given year a child is more likely to be killed in an equestrian accident, as a result of youth football, or as a passenger in a car? If we prevent our children from learning how to navigate the world beyond their front yard, it will only come back to haunt them later on. So, you know, obviously there's a balance. This is one of those times I'd like to qualify the heck out of things, but just take it as in the context I'm seeing it. Culture has created a parenting pressure cooker while missing some of the majoring in things we oughtn't major in and missing some of the things we should. And then this quote, our fears fanned by the media tend to be so out of proportion with the real threats facing our children that we micromanage and obsess. And I'm not going to finish that quote because I want to move on but to results. But these efforts to spare our kids pain and sadness will backfire, and they have backfired. And I'm not going to get through all these. That's why I put a little more detail in the notes, so I'll get through a couple, and then I got one last point. But the long-term impact, if we let our presence be what protects them, you get learned helplessness, where kids are just passive and indifferent and dependent and just reacting to the next thing they're supposed to do because they've never had to figure out anything for themselves. Unprepared for life. They don't have life skills like relational IQ or conflict-solving skills or ability to set goals and attain them or overcome challenges. And they have a real hard time holding jobs. I'm hearing about it from people who are having young people come into their jobs now. It's backfiring. All this academic preparation, they look good on paper, but they have no initiative. They're whiny, expect the boss to flex around their desires and their schedules and their job description that they prefer and have a weak work ethic. And they're slow to leave home. Delayed financial independence, and super entitled. Today's children whine more, are more disrespectful, and throw tantrums long past the age when yesterday's children were over them completely. And I like this one. Educators complain that many children have trouble transitioning to preschool because they've been played with so constantly and have gotten so much of what they want all the time at home. They come to kindergarten over-prepared intellectually and under-prepared in basic social skills. Okay, there's psychological problems. Being controlled breeds desire for more control. Being raised by fear breeds more fear. So you got kids who are getting diagnosed with depression and anxiety at younger and younger ages. And our over-involvement increases our kids' chances of suffering from depression, anxiety, to become cutters, to have suicidal thoughts. They fear disappointing their parents. There's more separation anxiety because they weren't given a chance to master the skills. So helicopter parenting does harm our kids, and there's more fear. These people are, kids are, have fear of failure, fear of people, fear of the unknown, fear of change. And I'm just going to talk, well, this one, no resilience. I am going to read this quote. A colonel at West Point Military Academy said, young men today are less resilient than ever. If you raise your voice, they get teary-eyed like no one has ever corrected them before. If you're prevented from feeling discomfort or failure, you have no sense of how to handle those things at all. All right, health and safety. I'm not going to go into that. Stats say by all this overprotection, the stats aren't improved. The injury stats aren't improved at all, and our immune systems are probably getting worse. This one, parents are stressed and marriages are ending. Just the high points of these last two quotes. When kids were asked what they'd like to change most about parent schedules, few of them wanted more FaceTime. They wanted their mom and dad to be less tired and stressed. That's good information. And then this one's really important, because I think, especially for those of us who are moms, it's real natural to love our kids. It's our job. But if you live an entirely child-centric life, you can lose touch with your husband or whatever to the point where you got nothing left to say when the kids leave home and kind of press the pause button thinking you can pick it back up. But it turns out the divorce rates are rising fastest for empty nesters. New empty nesters have the biggest divorce rate because all of a sudden they're left with each other, and what's left if you haven't kept your marriage going? All right. Real quick, some steps to resist the negative cultural trends and messages. And I'm not going to get super practical here. That'll happen in discussion groups. But first, I'll say this again. Please don't use this to breed more fear. My hope is that you'll be able to step back, major in the majors, and not worry so much about the minors, and relax with your kids, relax with your friends. You know, it's hard work, but it's also really cool work. So please don't let this breed more fear. We will mess up. You can try and do everything possible to get it right, and your kids will still have problems, and you might not find out till it's too late to do anything about it. In their 20s, they come back, you know, Mom, when you did this, that really was hard to take, and now I messed up things. This quote really got me thinking. It was the end of one of the books I read. It said, to parent in such a state of calm, in other words, step back and chill out a little bit, you have to be able to believe that things will basically turn out okay. And frankly, at this point in time, there is not much reason to believe they will not. There is much reason to believe they will not. So this is kind of a depressing quote. She's like, you have to be able to believe that things will basically turn out okay. And that got me thinking, you know, if I didn't know from a Christian perspective that things will turn out okay in the end, ultimately, and that the best is yet to come, I would live in total fear. I would totally parent in fear, completely, because like she says, there's not much reason to believe that this world is going to be awesome. Crashing economy, unstable, uncertain, you know, and all this, all the cultural trends that we've got to help our kids navigate through that weren't there before. So you're thinking, what can you do? Well, when I was raising my kids, I always told them, God, I wish I could be the perfect parent and not harm you or hurt you or do the wrong things. But I can't. But what I can do is point you to the one who is a perfect parent. God, our Heavenly Father, is the only perfect parent. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, okay, that's all nice, but how does that help me raise my kid now? Glad you asked. Yes, we do have to have practicals to live life in this world, and you'll get a chance to talk about that. But this is the most important. I felt like it really needs to be said, and even though it goes against every cultural trend, bear with me here. This verse in the Bible, it says, as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. This is saying that every person who receives Jesus becomes a child of God, the one true Father. So on the cross, what the cross was about is that Jesus paid for every one of our sins, every person's sin. He said, put that wrath on me, God. I do care about the problem of evil. But I'd rather pay for it myself than have other people have to pay the debt for their sin. So anyone who says yes one time to Jesus' offer of forgiveness to clean our moral slate by that payment becomes a child of God once and for all. A child of the one true Father, the maker of the universe. And with that, in addition to eternal life with no condemnation, just for the asking, comes some real advantages and privileges for life now. I put some scriptures on your paper. I'm not going to read them all. You can read them, and I hope you do. But it gives us access to God's help and mercy so that we're not under a pile of guilt and so that we can be merciful to our kids. We can pray for our kids. You can ask God to hover over them so we don't have to, right? And God's better at it. We're not left grasping at loose roots for stability that can't hold. God is the rock. God is unshakable, and he is unchanging. To have that sure foundation, God promises to work all things together for good. He doesn't promise nothing bad will happen, but he promises it will work out, just like that she was saying in that. God promises that it will basically turn out well. What a promise is that? And then, since God is with us wherever we go, there's no fear. And we're not alone. And just to close, to demonstrate how getting right with God and orienting our lives around him really is the best thing we can do for our kids. It's not just this Christian preaching pie in the sky. I'm going to close with an excerpt from a write-up I saw by a kid who was raised by Christian parents, answering what difference he thought it made in his life to be raised this way. He said, "Having Christian parents was far more than just growing up in a Christian household. It meant that my parents set an example of what it was like to trust God to provide for our family's needs. We were raised in the stability of the truth that if any of us died an untimely death, God was still good, and we would all be together one day in heaven as those who had chosen to put their trust in Christ. Meanwhile, I saw many of my friends' parents fretting or angrily confronting school staff to try and optimize their child's experience. It's not that my parents never went to bat for me with other grown-ups or tried to help me with opportunities to flourish, but they never did it with the same frenetic urgency I saw in other families. Again, that's because they believed that God would take care of us in a very real, tangible sense. They never needed to be our saviors because we already had one. They never needed to be perfect parents because God already is. They freely admitted that their love for us was imperfect and directed us to God, whose perfect love casts out all worry, striving, and fear. We're not without our issues or lacks or bangs or bruises, but even in really bad circumstances or after really major setbacks or mistakes, we're never without confidence that it's going to be okay. I'm so glad, so much better off that they didn't model instead which brands to buy or which schools to push us into. Those things were part of their parenting, but never the most important part. If their biggest fight had been for those, I would have grown up a well-taken-care-of child who didn't know how to navigate a changing world, because I would only know how to stay safe and not how to have peace or joy in any circumstance. I wouldn't have known contentment, that unflappable rest in my soul, regardless of health or wealth or success or failure. And what better could a parent possibly wish for their kid? What better gift could anyone impart? In my opinion, no parent could ever do greater things for their kids than to teach them to love God and to trust God's love, which will continue to guide them and care for them long after the parents are gone." So the difference here is really good news. The difference here isn't that the parents did everything right. It's that they could point the kids to the one Lord and Father of everything who could help in ways that the parents couldn't. And like the quote said, to parent in such a state of calm, you have to be able to believe that things will basically turn out okay. When you know Christ, you're assured that it will forever. And if you help your kids know Christ, then the worst thing this world has to dole out to them is nothing, because they're going to be fine forever. And that's, talk about not having to live in fear anymore. So that's what I have. We're supposed to have a little Q&A, but I went a little long, so it's just, I'll take two, maybe three questions. Way back in the back. No promise I can answer them.
Thanks for this. I had a quick question. I've had some experiences doing play dates or whatever, and we've dealt with like a hover parent, and I'm one, like, I like my kids to deal with conflict and try to help my son have conflict with his friends, and because he's like a rule follower, so I try to push him on to talk it through. Mm-hmm. But I've had experiences where moms have like yelled across the yard at my son, and then I'm trying to be respectful to have my son go and talk to the mom, and she like defended like, "Well, you just did this to my daughter," mm-hmm. and like walked my son up to me to talk about it, but then their child wasn't there. So I struggle with, like, in those experiences, how can I model to my child to respect authority and listen when an adult talks to you, because there is going to be multiple different authorities that act differently, and I don't want to cater towards like every teacher is going to talk to you this way and they're mm-hmm. always going to help you. What advice would you give to someone like me in the middle of the moment, trying to be respectful to like a friend that we're playing with and my adult friend, but also model to my child who's getting corrected without their child even being involved and doesn't even seem to be bothered?
Oh God. Well, one thing is to realize there's going to be plenty of bad authority or less than preferable authority in your kid's life, which is really hard. And so one of the things that you got to keep in the back of your mind. It's not like you can explain this to your young kid, but you can model it that you can still be respectful. You don't have to apologize for something you didn't do, but you can apologize if it seemed that way. And, like, really resist the temptation to make excuses for your kid, or if your kid was being the bad one, it's really tempting to say, well, he didn't get breakfast today, or he didn't sleep well last night. Just leave that go and teach him to say sorry where he needs to say sorry, and then keep that separate as far as your relationship with the other mom, and maybe talk to her about that separately if needed. But I think teaching your kid how to navigate being unfairly treated is one of the biggest things you can do for your kid, because it's going to go on and on and on. And that was probably the hardest task that I had with my son. Yeah. Oh, here's one.
Oh.
Okay. Go ahead. Oh, were you going to ask a question?
Oh, I'll
okay,
get to
you
it.
Go to next.
Kind of along the same lines, how do you deal with when we've had issues with my kid's school putting an overemphasis on academics and performance to the detriment of social development and all that kind of stuff? How do you balance that as a parent to advocate for healthy, well-rounded, you know, like there's so much emphasis on school. Mm-hmm. Or academic performance, and it gets pushed on our kids, not even mm-hmm. if we're trying to counter that at home, while also respecting, like, they are the authority, you know, we do have to do this packet of homework because mm-hmm. it was given to you by your teacher, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to set, this is what our family values, so this is what we're going to do. I don't want to be the parent that's like, well, you don't have to do your homework because we have other things, you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't know.
That's really hard, especially with stuff that has to be turned in. Like, one thing, how old's your, or are your kids, second grade? Yeah, it just starts getting more and more and more. And the teachers are under the gun to do what they have to do, so it's not probably even within the teacher's freedom to change that, which is rough. But one thing we tried to do is, like, we wanted our kids to do homework, but we didn't keep them home from things we thought were important. You know, we still had family time, but maybe it was cut short. Maybe it wasn't the day we spent the whole day at the zoo if they had a big project. But we also realized, okay, I'm not going to hold out for all A's or even all B's. You know, if it got below a C, we had something to say. But realize, okay, you know, maybe my kid's not going to be first in the class. I'd rather him be sane than first in the class. And, you know, you can ask your teacher about it and you know, see what they have to say. But, you know, let the quality be, you know, maybe less than perfect, or in faith, put the first things first and do what you can with the rest. I can't think of one perfect thing, because there's not like a perfect balance, but just you'll have to strive for that, you know, and teach them how to strive for that for the rest of their lives. So it's really hard, but and we can talk more later. I'll hang out later if you want. Let's take Linda and then we'll go to discussion groups.
Well, I don't know if you really want to answer my question here. I was kind of rethinking it, but I'll ask it anyway. have you learned anything, like just being a parent all these years or in your study for this, whether or not schools are good or better or worse or not so great at incorporating that character element of, you know, kids growing up, or are they only stressing academics and stressing things like political correctness? And do you have a feel for that?
My feel from my experience, I think our Xenos school here stresses character very well,
yeah,
and that's why
that.
We paid the money to send them. So glad we did that, even though it kind of nipped in the savings that we might have had, but was well worth it. But, you know, like in high school, they give out awards for everything. You know, when I graduated from high school, it was awesome if you had a certificate or two and something like that. Now, if you go to a grad party, they just wallpaper the place with things, and they have things, they have rewards for character, but by far the awards are for academics and go, go, go. And there are so many opportunities to measure yourself against the others and all the accolades and the scholarship nights. You know, they have nights that reward academic achievement. They don't have nights that reward, you know, they have multiple nights that reward academic achievements, big assemblies, and then maybe something like my son got a cats with class thing once, and so they had a daytime little thing. So they threw it a bone, but by far the emphasis is the other. So we could talk more. I want you guys to have a chance to discuss, so I'm just gonna say a quick prayer, and then you guys can get in groups. God, I thank you that you haven't left us alone to do this job. I thank you that you give us wisdom if we ask, and I pray that you would lead everyone in this room to just have knowledge of you and have you involved in their life and in their parenting and have the hope for afterlife. And I pray that you would use the discussion groups to answer questions that need answered. Amen.